For much of this year, observers expected the Indiana governor's race to be an easy win for Republicans, but the race has tightened up. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Could 20 years of GOP control of the Indiana governor's office end this year? Joining me now to talk about the candidates, the issues, and the politics at play are Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. Welcome back, Brandon.
Always great to be here.
Indiana Capital Chronicle Editor-in-Chief Nikki Kelly. Thanks for being here, Nikki.
Thanks for having me.
And Indianapolis Star Politics Editor Caitlin Lang. Welcome, Caitlin.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Brandon, Indiana has three candidates running for governor. Tell us briefly about the three of them.
Sure. Well, Mike Braun is a one-term U.S. senator. Before that, he served a few years in the Indiana State House, and he was served about a decade as a local school board member in his hometown of Jasper, which is in southwestern Indiana. A tentpole of his campaign is his experience as a business owner. He built an auto parts distribution business in that hometown of Jasper into a multi-million dollar company, which has largely also allowed him to sort of self-finance many of his campaigns. Jennifer McCormick is the last elected state superintendent of public instruction here in Indiana. Lawmakers during her tenure made that position into an appointed one rather than elected. Notably, McCormick served in that office as a Republican and changed her party affiliation to Democrat after she left office. And then finally, Donald Rainwater is the Libertarian. This is his second time running for governor. He ran in 2020 and received about 11% of the vote, which was by far the highest vote share that a Libertarian has ever received in the state of Indiana. So Rainwater is looking to capitalize on that performance and the name recognition that goes along with it into an even better performance this time.
Caitlin, as I mentioned, Republicans have held the governor's office for years in Indiana. Wasn't this race initially seen as an easy one for Senator Mike Braun to win?
Yeah, I mean, Democrats haven't even won a statewide office in a decade. So it's not just the governor's office we're talking about. It's the whole entire executive branch in Indiana. You know, this did start out. Most ratings analysts, pundits were saying this should be a solid, safe Republican race. But just in the last couple of weeks, really, you had a couple of ratings agencies change this from solid Republican to likely Republican. So, you know, basically what that means is, yes, it's still Braun's race to lose, but there is a path for McCormick if everything goes really, really well for her. And, you know, there have been some interesting changes in the last week, some maybe flaws in Braun's campaign, I would say. There's been some tension between him and his lieutenant governor nominee. So, you know, all of that kind of does make things a little bit easier in a state where Democrats have had a hard time winning over the past decade.
Nikki, tell us more about that. What's changed in the last few weeks to make these analysts and pundits think that the race has tightened up?
Well, I mean, I think that when Mike Braun put out a negative ad against Jennifer McCormick, that sort of opened everyone's eyes a little bit. I mean, we don't have his internal polling, but he's clearly not taking anything for granted. And then on top of that, like, it was a digitally altered ad that accuses her of something she's never actually spoken on, which is banning gas stoves. So it just was a peculiar thing. It was, he didn't have the required disclaimer under the state law. He later then took the digitally altered part out. It was just a couple of days of missteps, I think, that kind of caught everyone's attention. We also had two debates. And so I think, you know, I think some of the polling must be tighter than some of the public ones that have been released to see that come from Senator Braun.
Brandon, Caitlin mentioned Senator Braun's lieutenant governor candidate. Talk about how lieutenant governor candidates are chosen in Indiana, because it's different than in Ohio and Kentucky, and what impact those candidates are having in the race.
Yeah, really important to talk about that this cycle. So in Indiana, lieutenant governor candidates are chosen by the state party conventions in the summer. So historically speaking, what that's largely meant is whoever wins the public, you know, the open primary race for governor for both Democrats and Republicans, then says, this is who I want to be my lieutenant governor candidate, running mate. And the party delegation, or, you know, the party conventions, the delegates there just sort of rubber stamp the pick. That didn't happen this time. And that's because Micah Beckwith, the Republican nominee for lieutenant governor, a pastor from central Indiana and a extremely hyper-conservative Republican, he has been running for lieutenant governor for more than a year. He started running last June and said, listen, I don't care who the gubernatorial nominee is going to be. I want to be their running mate no matter what. And so he ran a very organized, well-funded campaign that ultimately was successful, even though Mike Braun said, I want someone else to be my running mate. It was a close race at the convention, but ultimately Beckwith was chosen by the delegates, which I think is reflective of where the core of the Republican Party in Indiana is moving, which is further and further to the right. Now, Jennifer McCormick chose a former state lawmaker, Terry Gooden, who recently worked for the Biden administration in the Department of Agriculture, a longtime conservative Democrat, as her pick for running mate. There was initially some rumblings that Democrats would have their own contested convention race for LG because there were a lot of folks in the party, especially now, who were unhappy with the fact that in the past, as a lawmaker, Terry Gooden voted against gay marriage, or voted to ban gay marriage, really. He voted to restrict abortion access on more than one occasion. But when Gooden was named the pick, he came out immediately and said, listen, you know, I was wrong. Those positions reflected a different time, and most of them had taken place a decade or more earlier, to be fair. And so ultimately, it wasn't contested. It was a layup for Terry Gooden to be named the LG. So what you have is a dynamic where Mike Braun, you know, and Caitlin mentioned not being on the same page necessarily as his running mate. And that's kind of been true since he was handed this running mate over his express wishes.
One of the things that's come up with this running mate, Micah Beckwith, is this recent Jezebel spirit comment. Caitlin, can you talk about that and what Micah Beckwith has said he meant by that, how voters seem to be interpreting it?
Yeah, so that's been one of the missteps, so to speak, you know, that we've seen in the past couple of weeks. Basically, Micah Beckwith, you know, complained the Democratic ticket to the Jezebel spirit. He, in his telling, you know, he was saying that the Democrats' embodiment of ideals he considers evil, such as, you know, access to abortion, gender affirming procedures, those kind of things, that, you know, that's what he was referring to with the Jezebel spirit. But it also, you know, aside from where you stand on those issues, it does have some connotations, you know, a long entanglement with some sexist and racist connotations in American history. So, you know, naturally, Democrats have latched onto this because their, you know, Democrat Jennifer McCormick is running for governor. And then you also have a woman, you know, running for attorney general, woman running for Senate on the Democratic ticket. So it's a slate of women running that, you know, were sort of referred to as this Jezebel spirit. So, you know, Democrats obviously latched onto this during the debate. Jennifer McCormick, you know, asked Braun to apologize for this, same for the ad that Brandon mentioned earlier. And it just, it really has driven home the point that Braun doesn't necessarily want to be seen as having those kind of views when he's trying to run a general election campaign and appeal to more moderate voters than he was in maybe the primary.
We're talking about the Indiana governor's race. What issues are most important to you in the race? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Democrat Jennifer McCormick had this to say during the first debate.
I'm the only person on the stage who's been pregnant. I'm the only person on the stage who's given birth. I'm the only person on this stage who is a mom. And I understand firsthand the complexities associated with pregnancy. And I trust women. I trust healthcare providers. I believe in the standards that were set by Roe. It's time we return that. There is too much at stake. I know my opponent said that that he thought we got it right. And when you make comments like that, we put a lot of women's lives at risk.
Nikki, how big an issue is abortion in this race? How important is that issue in the governor's race?
Well, I think Democrats would like it to be the top issue. They are certainly running strong on that. I believe Jennifer McCormick is going to have a plan on reproductive rights. I think that will come out tomorrow. But, you know, I think the bigger issue is probably property taxes in terms of across the whole electorate. I don't think there are a lot of sole one topic voters as on abortion. We did have a race in 2022, right after the state changed the law, and we didn't really see much as a result of that in those state house races. So it'll be interesting to see if that can translate into votes for this November.
And Brandon, when Jennifer McCormick says that Senator Braun says, you know, we got it right, what is she talking about there?
I mean, in that, she's almost quoting him directly. Mike Braun has been asked several times about his position on the state's near total abortion ban. And, you know, I'm putting out in, let's see, you know, 42 minutes from now, my interview with Mike Braun. And he said, he calls Indiana a pro-life state. He says that lawmakers debated this and listened to their constituents. Now, Republicans at the State House did internal polling of their constituents during that abortion ban debate, and they did not listen to those polls. They did not listen to their constituents in that they absolutely that their polling and any public polling we've seen shows that a large majority of Hoosiers believe that Indiana's abortion law should be much less restrictive than it now is under that ban. But yeah, Mike Braun says he doesn't see any issues and that if there are, then it should be the legislature who decides them.
And Caitlin, where does the Libertarian candidate Donald Rainwater stand on this issue?
Yeah, he, you know, obviously is a big states' rights kind of guy. He, you know, thinks that while he is anti-abortion personally, that the issue should be litigated within the three branches of government is what he said. You know, if there's a constitutional issue, judiciary should speak up. And if citizens want changes, they should call their legislators is what he said on the issue.
Well, we are going to continue our conversation after a short break. And later in the program, we'll hear about a new exhibition showcasing the resilience and resistance of Native people. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about the Indiana governor's race. My guests are Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith, Indiana Capital Chronicle Editor-in-Chief Nikki Kelly, and Indianapolis Star Politics Editor Caitlin Lang. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Nikki, before the break, you mentioned that property taxes are a big issue for voters in Indiana. Tell us a little bit about that and what the candidates are saying about how they want to address those concerns.
Yeah, property taxes have spiked here in Indiana in recent years as inflation has gone up, as housing prices have gone up. And so we've really seen all three candidates agree that something needs to be done. Mike Braun, I would say, has the most expansive, I guess, realistic proposal, but his proposal would, I mean, it would take property taxes back to 2021 levels and also put in some brand new and large deductions. It would probably cost local governments upwards of maybe $1 billion. We don't know for sure because there are no fiscal estimates for it. And obviously local governments like your police station, your fire station, your library, your schools rely on those dollars. Jennifer McCormick, on the other hand, looked a little more holistically at tax relief as a whole. And because the state has a little more money than local governments, she would sort of look to aid on the income tax side to help deal with property tax relief. She also has some property tax relief, I think about $500 million worth in her plan. And then the Libertarian, his would be the most drastic. It would essentially eliminate property taxes for instead a 7% fee, sales tax, property tax when you just buy your property. And once you're done paying that 7%, you can pay it all at once. You can pay it over 7 years. You would just never have to pay again, but you'd still get services from your local governments.
There have been two gubernatorial debates in recent weeks. The first was with the Republican and Democratic candidates only. The third was with all three. Here's one of the points that Libertarian Donald Rainwater made in that second debate.
Folks, I'm a Libertarian. I am not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I don't have anybody pulling my strings or giving me large campaign donations in order to make sure that I do things their way. There is no Hope Inc. or Make It Red behind me. So I'm asking for your vote because I'll go in and I'll disrupt the system.
Caitlin, what were the most important moments of those debates when it comes to the issues that, voters in Indiana really care about?
Yeah, I think I was pleasantly surprised to see a debate that was really heavy on the issues. There was a lot of talk about property taxes during these, which again, all three candidates are talking a lot about. There was talk about education, which is another big one because, you know, as we mentioned earlier, McCormick, her background is in education as the former superintendent of public instruction. So, you know, there's some disagreement on, you know, Braun wants universal school choice, McCormick doesn't. So that was another big policy we saw talked about during the debate. And then also marijuana, you know, McCormick wants to eventually legalize it for recreational purposes, while Braun says, you know, medical marijuana makes sense, but otherwise he's emphasized that he wants to take his cues from law enforcement and otherwise kind of see what the state legislature does. So lots of big issues touched on in the debates, but also there was some of the undercurrents we mentioned earlier, you know, in the first debate, especially McCormick took every opportunity she could to bring up the doctored ad and Micah Beckwith. And then in the second debate with Rainwater on the stage, he didn't hold anything back, you know, in holding both McCormick and Braun accountable, you know, for McCormick's time as leading the state's education, and then also Braun's time in the U.S. Senate and, you know, some of his record there. So again, very issue heavy debate, but there's obviously going to be some digs in there too.
Yeah. We do have a caller on the line. Hi, James. Thanks for calling. What's your question or comment? Are you with us, James? Something happened with James. I'm going to put you on hold, James. We're going to try to figure this out. Nick. Oh, okay. Hi, James. Do we have you now?
Yes, you do. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
Well, my comment is that I live in Indiana, and I'm a liberal, and it's tough to vote in Indiana as a liberal because there's just very little chance of winning. However, my biggest concern in this election was making sure we don't have a leader at the top of the ticket, at the top of the nation, who's certifiably insane. And in Indiana, I'm concerned about property taxes, and I'm very happy with McCormick and the fact that she's got that education background and is a leader. I think she'd do a fine job.
Okay. Thank you so much, James. We appreciate your listening. We appreciate your call. Brandon, what? Well, first, let's hear something from Senator Braun. He was asked during one of the debates about the outcome of the 2020 presidential race.
Do you believe President Trump lost the election in 2020? 30 seconds here.
I believe that election had irregularities to it. I think they were investigated, certified the vote, and we're talking about 2024. And we're talking about how bad it's been since they've been in charge. Inflation, high costs, every basic need we have has gotten worse since then.
But to clarify here in 15 seconds, do you believe he lost the election 4 years ago?
I do.
Brandon, any thoughts on how much impact the presidential race could have on the governor's race in Indiana?
Oh, national races absolutely have an effect on local races increasingly across the country and including in Indiana. I think it's important to note that, I mean, I don't want to make a lot of predictions about how this election is going to go in Indiana, but the only thing I can safely say is that Donald Trump's going to win Indiana. It's just by a matter of by how much. So Donald Trump won Indiana by about 19 percentage points in 2016, about a little over 16 percentage points in 2020. So a slight erosion of his support. If that stays the same or even goes up, which is a possibility in 2024, it's almost impossible for Democrats to win at a statewide level because the coattail effect is just, and this is true pretty much everywhere, and certainly in states where elections are a lot closer. But if his support does erode, and particularly in suburban areas around Indianapolis, particularly among women, as we've seen that reflected in polling elsewhere in the country, that's where it starts to become possible for something like Jennifer McCormick or the Attorney General candidate Destiny Wells running against incumbent Republican Todd Rokita to try to capitalize on that slight softening of support for Donald Trump and make a go at a competitive race.
Nikki, there's also been new money flowing into the to the Democratic and Republican campaigns in Indiana in recent weeks. What does that tell you about how the national parties view this race?
Yeah, the big news last week was the Democratic Governors Association, which up until then had sat out this race, promised an infusion of $600,000 to Jennifer McCormick's campaign. I think the Republican Governors Association had sent $250,000 to Mike Braun maybe a week or so before. So I think it's fair to say that both sides have seen that tightening that we've been talking about. And so I think it definitely showed that it could get pretty competitive here at the end. I kind of harken back to 2012 when John Gregg ran for governor as Democrat. He ended up coming very close, within 5 points, I believe. And there was a lot of talk then that, you know, if he just had a week or two more, he could have, you know, made that momentum go the full way. And I kind of wonder if that's where we're heading, if Jennifer McCormick might get pretty close, but not quite be able to eclipse it.
Hmm. One of the points that Senator Braun raised during these debates was that if his Democratic opponent wins, she wouldn't be able to do anything with the Republican supermajority in the state legislature. Caitlin, what do you think of that? How has Jennifer McCormick responded to that assertion?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good point, because in the state house, there's, you know, Democrats obviously hope that they can break the supermajority, but there's basically no chance that they would break the majority in either chamber. So regardless, whoever's in the governor's office will have to work with state lawmakers who are Republican. And even, you know, even at times when you have a Republican both in the governor's office and in the state legislature, you know, there's still tension there sometimes. So having two different parties is going to be even more tension. You know, I was thinking about this the other day of what the outcome of this race could mean. And I think regardless of who wins, it's going to be significant, because there's going to be tension most likely whether McCormick wins and has to, you know, sort of push back on policies that state lawmakers have, or whether Braun wins and might have to grapple with a lieutenant governor that doesn't always agree with him. In the state legislature, they have more power than the state governor does in a lot of cases in Indiana. They can just override a gubernatorial veto with a simple majority. So, you know, any veto that McCormick would do, they can just override it. So Braun's point is very valid there. I think her hope would be that she can, you know, try to find middle ground and encourage lawmakers to pursue some of her ideas, at least, even if it's some of the non-controversial ones.
I'll just add, too, that what you've seen from Jennifer McCormick a little bit, probably not as much as some people might hope, but at least a little bit, is sprinkled throughout her many policy proposals. Both she and Braun have come out with, I mean, a lot of detailed policy proposals at this point, which as a reporter is great to see. But she started to sprinkle in things she could do administratively without the legislature to try to advance some of her policy ideas. She's talked about that with abortion. I mean, the legislature, regardless of who's in the governor's office, will likely not change the state's near total abortion ban. But McCormick, and maybe we'll see more of this tomorrow, as Nikki alluded to, she's going to come out with a more detailed abortion proposal. But she will control boards and commissions that regulate doctors and professions and things like that. We saw this with her plan to help try to lower utility costs. The legislature has been on the side of utility companies for a while now. And what McCormick is pointing out is the governor appoints the members of the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission, which is the body that approves the requested rate increases from Indiana's investor-owned utility companies. And so she's saying, listen, if I, as governor, without needing the legislator's approval, can put people on the IURC who aren't going to just be a rubber stamp for whatever big utility companies want to do, that can have a significant impact on what, you know, people who pay their utility bills will see on those bills. So she's tried to sprinkle those in a little bit of, here's what I can do as governor that doesn't require me to convince 51 lawmakers in the House and 26 in the Senate to go along with.
Well, I've been talking with Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith, Indiana Capital Chronicle Editor-in-Chief Nikki Kelly, and Indianapolis Star Politics Editor Caitlin Lang. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Great to be here.
We want to remind our listeners in Indiana that early voting has begun, and for more election information, check out the election guide on our website, wvxu.org. Up next, we'll hear about a new exhibition designed to celebrate the resilience and resistance of Native people. This is Cincinnati Edition.